Okay, today is Monday, where are we? December 5th, 2022, and I welcome everyone here and all those on screen and all those who will hear via yutorah.org. I just want to mention, I believe it was in the Sunday class a week ago, we spoke about the chiyuv to wear a kippah. And I mentioned how I still recall back in 69 my culture shock when I met from Jews of German origins owning shops in the center of town, little Van Dykes, and no kippah on their head. And my dear student Evelyn Weissman-Bahar, who comes from a Yekki family, although married into the Eidat HaMizrach, she writes, "My father grew up in Frankfurt on Main. He attended and graduated from the Hirsch Realschule. For Limidei Kodesh, in classes they wore kippot. For Limidei Chol, they did not. Even Rabbi Breuer taught history without a kippah. In the street, they wore hats and caps. In New York, my father always went out with a hat or cap, depending upon where he was going. In the late 1950s, early 1960s, when my brother and his friends started going everywhere and just to keep par, it was an adjustment for my father." Her father was a prominent medical doctor. He's mentioned in the book about Breuer, Landesman's book. You'll see her father mentioned there, Dr. Weissman. "My brother and Manny's her husband, kept hats, fedoras at my parents to wear when they davened at Breuer's on Shabbat well into the 1990s. So, Baruch Hashem, I was not incorrect in my description of German Orthodoxy. Do you have memories of that, or you're all Washington Heights? You're already from the...
I also kept the hat there.
You also kept the hat, Your father wore a kippah at home? Yeah, so your father already was assimilated into the Ashkenazi world. I just want to show again, this is the volume that I recommended. Let's see if I can get it proper. It's Beit Yosef, about Rabbi Avadya Yosef, and it's a very moving, honest volume. It'll bring tears to your eyes and laughter as well. Okay, let's pick up where we left off. Today's a very fascinating lecture. So you see, Satmar develops in America, and it develops quite big at least two decades, I would say. There was a lot of infighting with Chabad, and to a certain degree I can understand it, because Satmar was losing Chassidim to Chabad. They were more attractive. From 69 on, the Satmar Rav did not function. And from 69 on, I would say, the Lubavitcher Rebbe became a world-class figure. The messages were very different. Lubavitcher's outreach, their concept of every Jew having holiness in him, is quite different than Satmar, that will dismiss a religious Zionist or an Agud Yisrael person as being an apikoros. So you can see the difference, the attractions, but some went one way, some went the other way. What's very important to understand about Satmar is that it was not totally Rebbe-orientated. If you recall, when I first started lecturing on the Satmar, I always said, and I still say, the Satmar Rav. If you would say the Satmar Rebbe to Rabbi Yoelish, you're putting him down. Because what does a Satmar Rebbe mean? It means you inherited a Rebbeship, you have the blood in your veins. You can be a Lamdin, you can be an Amoritz, but you have the Yichus. Satmar Rav means you were Rav of the very important city in Austro-Hungary. You were Rav, a Talmud Chacham, you Paskin Shilas, you were looked up to for your learning. And there's a big difference between a Rebbe to a Rav. And I can show it to you very easily. When Shemaim Zakini, I find things that Minishamayim, I just found this last week. And it's like today's lecture. Here, this looks very innocent. Grace after meals, right or wrong. Mechegigat bar mitzvah, and it gives three names of three boys with the same last name. So right away you start to wonder, what's this talking about? Are these triplets? Same name, bar mitzvah, same date. All right, that problem I solved. It's cousins. They're evidently, it's two families. Evidently one sister, or one, I shouldn't say sister, these are sisters-in-law, because they all have the same last name. One sister evidently had twins, and one sister-in-law had one boy. It makes sense. I have twins, grandchildren, so I know that you have two families, fine. But there's something different about this benching. The benching is totally normal, English translation, totally normal, no additions whatsoever. Yet when you open it up, here, what do you see? And next to it is a letter from the Rebbe written to a bar mitzvah boy many decades ago in Hebrew and English, translation. You see, this is a Rebbe, and this is Lubavitch. I don't believe anyone can produce a bencher from Satmar with Rabbi Yoelish's picture in it. You follow the difference? And I need not tell you, when I look at this bencher, my Litvish genes are a little bit upset, because Ribbono Shel Olam, we're benching to God. What is the Rebbe doing here? All right, a chassid will say it's because of the Rebbe's influence that I became a good Jew, that I benched, that I know how to bench. But Satmo would not have this. And this reflects in much more than a Rebbe versus a Rav. In Lubavitch, any of you who have friends who are Lubavitch, everything centered around the Rebbe. There was no other authority in Lubavitch whatsoever. The Rebbe made all decisions. Yes, he had Gabayim who translated them. We spoke about them, Rabbi Dr. Mindel, Reb Leibel Groner, Manny Quinn's father, Rabbi Quinn Sr. They translated what the Rebbe said into a practical level, a practical ability to fulfill it. But everything came from the Rebbe. Satmar, he developed the Kehila. He wasn't the only one with power, just the opposite. He delegated power to Gabayim. There was Ashkenazi, there was Friedman, there was Gluck, and these Gabayim had power. They didn't have to ask the Rebbe every question. The Rebbe depended upon them, what they decided. Of course, theological questions, that was the Rebbe. But building, money, government relations, a lawyer, they made their own decisions. And this is the secret of why Satmar, from 69 to the Rebbe's death in 79, they were able to function, even though the Rebbe was incapable of functioning. He spoke once or twice during that period in public. No one understood him. His speech was taken away by the stroke. And nevertheless, the Gabayim could keep it running. And this is something you have to understand. Until today, Satmar, you have two different Satmars. We'll see later how this all develops. But you have Gabayim of power. The Rabbeim are not, it's not Lubavitch. It's not, and this is what we said last week when we quoted from Mintz's book. Mintz quoted Chassidim who were quite insightful, that they differentiated between Lubavitch to Satmar, to the Rebbe, the Lubavitch Rebbe, to the Satmar Ruv. And this venture, I think, says it all. And I call your attention, there's not one, when I opened this up, I started to shake. I thought this is messianicism. There's no reference to messianicism in it. I checked, if you're familiar the way the Messianics bench, they have, when we make all the arrangements, at the stage, no mention of the Rebbe here. When you open up a Messianic one, you'll see there's mention of the Rebbe. But it shows you, it indicates the difference and how Satmar could function so many years when there was no Rebbe. Now, with Lubavitch, what actually happened is they also function without a Rebbe, but there's no new addition to Lubavitch. Everything goes back to what the Rebbe taught, the outreach, the shluchim. It's not that it takes on any new frame of reference. On the other hand, what I said last week is very important. People, on a popular language, people say, well, the Lubavitch is like Breslov. Yes, but there's one big difference. No one ever saw the Breslov of a Rebbe. No one ever saw Reb Nachman. We know his teachings, okay? We quote, we have his Sforim. The Lubavitch Rebbe remains a living presence. And this is, you can view it as the tragedy of modern times, or the miracle of modern times. And you think about it. For me, it's sad. You need a living Rebbe, you need someone alive, to me. But to a Lubavitcher, looks at, what do I need a Rebbe? I have him on screen, I have 100,000 hours of videos. Millions, and by the way, millions and millions of dollars have put into refurbishing and enhancing. And putting in TypeScript, you got to give credit. But on the other hand, it's not a live Rebbe. But he'll say, what's the difference? I hear the Rebbe, I hear the message, I understand the message. I get my guidance. I mean, only Lubavitch could come up with opening up the Kitvei of the Rebbe. You open it up and you find what page you opened it to. It's like a Goral Hagra. You follow a Goral Hagra. All right, for me, it's hard to accept this. But I have to tell you, I know people who have done it and got answers. They found them. You know how it works, Dave. You don't know. You open up, you have so many the volumes of the Rebbe, his letters, Ikrot, his Divrei Torah. You open up a volume randomly. You say, this is my question. You open it. The page you open, you look what's there. And you find the pasuk that gives you guidance, that tells you what to do. And they have it like it's a living Rebbe yet that they're getting guidance from in this mysterious way of opening and doing a gori. You know, a gori hagra is, that's in the Litvish world.
Whether
we take a Tanakh, open it up, and should you leave, go to Shanghai or go to Japan or stay behind, you open it up. Vayetze Yaakov. Could you imagine? Vayetze Yaakov, you got your answer. Go. Okay, so they do it on every question possible. We the Goral Hagras, the famous story when they recovered bodies, and I think it was from Gush Etzion. And they didn't know who's who. And B'leit Breira, they did a Goral and this one. Then. Today, with the DNA, you can identify bodies, and we have miracles that still go on with bodies being identified from 48. All right, so that's an important concept to remember. And we'll come back to it in a few minutes. Now, well, we left off last week, our friend Chaim Dolphin, Rabbi Dolphin, and he's, I would love to introduce you to him because he's a real, alive character, a Chabatnik, B'lei V'nefesh, and alive. It's a pleasure to talk with him, a pleasure to hear him lecture. He's inspiring. But he's a Lubavitcher. And he wrote this book on the Rav and the, he wrote many books, the Rav there, but the one I'm quoting from is on Satmar and Lubavitch. And finally, after writing about Satmar so many chapters, he decides to visit Kiryat Yoel. And he goes for Shabbat. This is not that long ago. I think it was 2014. I gave you the date last week. I think it was 2014. But it's not that long ago. It's in the last decade. He spends his Shabbos in Kiryat Yoel. And now he's experimented with different shuls. He's been in the Satmar shul. He's been in the Breslov shul. And now he's walking to a special shul that a wealthy young Satmar man built. And he was told, this is very different than anything you've ever seen. And it's already 12:30. It's, you know, a good Jew like myself is already davening mincha. And here he's going to see them in the middle of davening. He enters the shul called the Kollel, and I'm quoting. I couldn't make this up if I wanted to. Proceeding inside, I encounter a most peculiar scene. In like, unlike any other house of worship I have ever been to, here some men are praying, some are just sitting around and reading the newspaper, playing chess, or just chatting and drinking alcohol. Would this go on in Shalavim? I asked you. No, you tell me. This is unbelievable. This is a shul? Yeah, Morty, don't tell me it goes on where?
No. I have a friend. There's a shul there. He likes to be there, the atmosphere and everything. He goes and davens early, and then he hangs out in the shul.
Halavai, these people would have davened already, Ariane. You follow these people? Halavai, they would have davened. But take a look what he says here. Some are just sitting around reading the newspaper, playing chess, or just chatting and drinking alcohol. Now, so this number one is a new concept that as a kid, you know, I could have never understood this. You know, as young people, we see someone looks frum, you think they're really frum. My youngest daughter, her life was greatly affected by one incident. We were in Russia at the time, and she was a young girl, very sincere, and she goes to the OU, and she was going away for Shabbat. She had a little suitcase with her, a travel case, and she left it. She didn't watch it. She figured, who's going to rob at the OU? P.S. it was robbed. And it caused many changes in her life, but that's not important now. But you say, here you see people, long beards, Satmar clothes, everything looks like Satmar chassidim, and total apikrasim, question everything about religion, laugh at everything, and that's what I introduced last week, orthoprax and orthodox, Hasidic prax, Hasidic dox. And this takes you into a whole new world, a world, by the way, which is much bigger today. It's not just Satmar. With the social media, you have chat rooms. I don't know what it's called. I'm not part of this world. I understand already what's going on. And they maledict and laugh at the rabbis. Ah, that Rakefet is an idiot. He doesn't believe men can marry men and women can marry women. He's from the old. He's from the world of darkness, of Chayshech. I'm paraphrasing the Machlokes 200 years ago with the Maskilim, etc., etc. But they outwardly live like they're frum, like they're Hasidim. And they don't want to break with the world. I've seen programs. My daughter, this daughter I just spoke about, always sends me links that she believes Malk and I would be interested in these programs. One of them is they put together a Baal Tshuva and someone who left the way they grew up. It's not entirely they left, but they're not. We had a lot of Akmas Nefesh. It's a daughter of people in Russia who were Moise and Nefesh for Yiddishkeit. And here she's in university and she studied in Kabbalah. And she took off. She married, covered her head, covered wore a tichel, and she took off the tichel. I mean, to me, it hurts. But the har, it's liberation. She's more modern. Parents were mice and nefesh for Yiddishkeit in Moscow, and she's taking off her head covering in Jerusalem. All right. So my daughter sends me links. They're very fascinating. And you see people, this is discussed, that people who don't believe, but they're at home. They're married into this world. Their parents are part of this world. I once had this discussion with someone in England. I don't want to mention his name because it may not be complimentary, although the story ends very differently. When I was a guest of the community in Hendon and Golders Green, so I was there for a month. Malk and I were there, I gave many, many lectures. And big crowds came, they were very interested. It's a lot of yekkers are there from the kinder transport. And when I spoke on Rav Hirsch, hundreds and hundreds of people. And they were very fascinated, because not many people can speak about the differences between Rav Hirsch and Rav Soloveitchik. You follow? People take for granted, if you're YU, you're Hirschian. There's tremendous differences. But all right, I at least I can master both parts of Washington Heights, Charlie. So what's fascinating, you see these people, you see their observance, but underneath the surface, occasionally they'll admit, I have a question here and this. A very important Jew wanted to see me. So I asked my hosts, I said, look, you brought me here. I'm your servant. This individual wants me to spend the day with him. What do you say? Should I go? Absolutely. Very important for us, you go. Someone big from the Haredi world. Anyway, we spent the day together, a wonderful day. At the end of the day, this Haredi, whose father is Dayan v'chulu v'chulu, Agudat Yisrael, whose brother is v'chulu v'chulu, he says to me, Harav Rakefet, you have truth. We don't. So I say to him, what's the problem? Join me. He says, I can't. It'll hurt my father. It'll hurt my mother. What will my wife say to her father, to her mother? What do I say to my brother? So I told him, let me tell you a story. The Rav, you can pick this up. It was either at a Yahrzeit Shir or in Moriah. And the Rav tell, I, if I'm not mistaken, I quote this story, I translate from the Yiddish into English in the Rav, the world of. Eli, you tell me if I quote it. Do you know my two volumes by heart? Yes, sir, Baruch Hashem. Okay, so the Rav says, you need courage to be a good Jew. The problem with the Jews I found here in the 1930s, they had no courage anymore. They gave up all hope. And he tells the story. He was teaching at the Chevra Shas, and they brought in a successful businessman and you know, a Ayuda Peisha. And he's sitting there with the Rav, and he starts crying, and he says, Rebbe, du hast emes gerech. You're right, you have truth. And I should kasha my house, and I should do... And the Rav says, Nu, was tut man das? Why don't you do it? And the guy says, Rebbe, if I would do it, my wife would say, I'm crazy. My children would say, I'm insane. You need courage. It's exactly what this individual did. Now, the end of the story with England is that this man's father, who's so famous in the Agudah world, comes to Israel. And they found out that he was in favor of yeshiva boys getting a core curriculum. And they put up paskvilas against him in Meir Sharim. And the man had a heart attack and died. So the son picked up with his wife, instead of joining yours truly in Jerusalem, he remains a big fan of mine. He wrote about me recently in the Fictible Rabbi Aaron Rakefet, that he's still teaching and writing and doing, and he's in Beverly Hills, a big shot in the modern Orthodox community there. So, but you see, that this is something we never dreamt about. 200 years ago, Mendelssohn's Talmidim, 150 years ago, the Haskalah, they picked up, spat in the face of God and Torah, their family, and Judaism, and walked away happily. Today, the Torah civilization is big, it's powerful. They don't walk away so quickly. And this is what he discovered in Satmar. I don't think you'll find this in Lubavitch. I'll tell you why. Because Lubavitch, if you don't believe in it, you walk away. You can go to YU, you can go here, you can go there. You can go in Aliyah. Lubavitch, it's not so confining. But Satmar, if you walk away, you're breaking with everything. And then, all right, I'm family, I'm Baruch Hashem. They feed me, they clothe me. I'm still part of the crowd, even though deep down I may be very different. Now, while he's here, and I'm quoting from Dalfin, while he's here in Kiryat Yoel, and today Palm Tree City, and he can't believe what they're talking about. I overhear two men talking about the importance of a sovereign Jewish state in the wake of the Holocaust. I was blown away to hear such talk in this town of all places, the world center of religious anti-Zionism. When these two people saw he was interested in their discussion, they asked him to join him. And they were criticizing the Ribbono Shel Olam. Why didn't they intervene in the Holocaust? Hey, this is in Satmar. We can't understand the ways of God. Why didn't he intervene? And you see, this is also something I discovered. I was in the heart of Borough Park Satmar 2014. And here they're fighting a war in Israel. And my grandson was wounded in battle. I was a nervous wreck. I wanted to go back. My children here said, no, stay, don't come back. You just be another responsibility for us. Because, you know, we're older. The kids, I have to be honest, we lean on our children today. So I saw the Satmar. They're involved with the war just as we were. And they're so concerned. And I was speaking with one Satman. These are right. Some of them are my students, so you may say they sought me out. But I saw, this is why I said I'm right. When I had that big machleik of the Rabbi Gold with Reb Shalom Gold, I think I'm correct. Satmar is the biggest future reservoir for Balei Tshuva. We have to bring them back to the real Torah Tashem Tamima. And you see it here. But not only that, then he starts to talk, and this guy is a musician. He makes a living. Vic, I hope everything is okay with Vic Snow. He's not here with me yesterday. He was not well. Remember when I told you that I was better off when I was teaching MTA youngsters, 14, 15 years old. No one would, one student died. If you look into Revel, I have a dedication to Mitch Marmarish. He was my student, lovely young man. A few years later, he died of cancer. And I dedicated, later I taught his niece, and I got to meet his sister and his mother, and they told me how much it meant to them. Already there are four editions of the Revel book, and in each edition there is that paragraph. That is what remains of him today. And all right, but outside of Mitch, I don't recall any other tragedy like that. But when you teach older students, I can give you a whole list of students who are no longer with us from this very classroom. All right, anyway, so this musician tells him, Satmar guy, I love the music of Shlomo Lakalbach. And Dolphin responds, I'm writing a book about it. He wrote a book. I quoted it when I dealt with Kalbach. The Real Shlomo, which was published in 2014, we began to speak about Kalbach, and one of them says, Kalbach is greater now than during his lifetime. Another so-called Satmar, you think Kalbach is great now? Just wait and see how more and more people are going to start gravitating towards his music and lifestyle. All right, I have to tell you, gravitating towards this music, I can't get away from it. Every Friday night, no matter where I daven, black hats, no black hats, religious Zionism, Torah V'Avoda people, it's all Kalbach. I can't get away from it. My son-in-law, Shul, they had a tremendous machloket. People wanted Kalbach every Friday night. And my son-in-law, Shul, it's strict democracy. They put it to a vote. So they reached a compromise, the Gemara and Brachot. 3 weeks out of the month, regular davening with one or two Kalbach Nigunim. But Shabbos, Mavachim, Rosh Chodesh, it's Kalbach. I tell Malka, I'll be home 10 minutes later in Malasad. All right, lifestyle, I have my reservations. But you see that right here in Kiryat Yoel, Satmar followers, Kalbach, Zionism, Holocaust questions, and Dolphin ends off that chapter. It's time to open a Beit Chabad in Kiryat Yoel. All right. Now, let me go one step further. I'm going to introduce you to a very fascinating volume in a minute, but I have to say one thing. There's one person on the Satmar scene who's second to Rabbi Yoelish, was extremely charismatic and hard to comprehend it, but this was a lady who, in a world that certainly women don't play a public role, Rebbetzin Feiger becomes a very public figure. And as you all know from the lectures, this was the second wife of the Satmar Rav. She also couldn't have children. There were people in the Satmar hierarchy or Balabatim who told the Rebbe, divorce her, you need children, you need an heir. But the Rebbe valued her and remained with her. Now, it wasn't only that she was the Rebbetzin. She did something which put Satmar on the map until today. And everyone thinks of Satmar, anti-Zionist, anti-State of Israel demonstrations. True. But there's another side to Satmar that everyone bows their head and benefits. And that is the Satmar Bikur Cholim, the Gemilat Chesed. And this was Feiger. And here, she had the ability to raise millions and millions and millions of dollars. And what she organized, if you know anything about the Bikur Cholim, it's for all Jews. They're not going to ask you, are you Satmar, are you Lubavitch, do you have a beard, don't you have a beard, do you carry in Shabbos, Samech on an Erev, not Samech on an Erev. Anyone who asks is helped. And I can tell you, I was intimate friend, like a brother, with Dr. Bernard Kabakal, Zichrono Levracha. Bernie Kavakow, you're not dealing with a lightweight. This man was one of the most famous cancer specialists in the whole world. And every year, I think it was New York Magazine, would write up the most 100 famous doctors. Bernie was always there as the top oncologist. I can tell you, I would spend Shabbat in his house, the phone never stopped ringing. People are calling from all over the world, with the treatment, how much to give of this and the other, chemotherapy. What a world-class expert and a world-class Jew. And Bernie and I united, not just that I taught some of his children, it was much more than that. he got him, he had relatives behind the Soviet curtain. And because of his position as a world-class oncologist, there were certain world-class conferences of cancer specialists, and he would go to Russia. So he was involved, he knew what was going on, he would go, he would help, and they couldn't say no, they had to let him in. And when I got involved, I can tell you, shvuta me, all the fundraising began in the Kabakow home on Fifth Avenue. That's where it all began. So Bernie would say to me, Aaron, he'd say, I know you don't like Satma. I don't like Satma. We can't take their anti-Zionism. But he says, you got to give them credit. That Bikur Cholum. And then he said something else, which I don't know if I should talk about publicly, but there was a Satma goon squad. And one time I used them quite successfully. Bernie made the contact. You get in touch with them. This guy doesn't want to give a get. You got to give them rabbinic authorities, you know, that this guy is a manubal. Of course, you know, any guy, any woman, but you got to, case was investigated. He's torturing his wife. He doesn't give a damn. He's playing around with other women. He doesn't need a get, so what? And his wife is an aguna. The goon squad would pick this guy up, work him over, drop him off in Staten Island in the Jewish cemetery there, and they would attach a note to his body, this time you're going to wake up, next time you're going to be underground in this cemetery. You know, boy, they gave a get so quickly you couldn't believe it. More effective than the Israeli system, you throw a guy into prison. Now they can throw him into solitary confinement. That works a little better. But and they evidently had to deal with the police, that the police found the banu, and they didn't intervene. I don't know how they did it, they didn't intervene. But Bernie used to say to me, Satma, on one hand, yay, we're upset with them. On the other hand, this Bikur Cholim, and now you know what the Bikur Cholim is. On all the big hospitals in the New York area, they have rooms that they rent or they bought, whatever, I don't know. This, the, and you got to stay for Shabbos. Here's a room, men here, women here, food, you come in, food, yes, ma'am?
They have a room there. Well, they keep it stocked with food, there's a code, you can get in.
Where is this? Where is this?
Hadassah,
yeah, but that's Satma too, or that's the...
And I've seen, and then all day the women are roaming around, and I didn't ask them, but they looked at me like Satma.
All right, so that they picked up from America. And that Rebbetzin Feger, this woman single-handedly, and you should know, whenever they write about Rabbi Yoyla, she'll read a New York Times article, so they'll always write, you know, the anti-Zionism, but they also will write that the Rebbetzin created endless goodwill. And there you have to give credit. And this goes on until today. Until today, I can tell you, you have the Bikur Cholim, and you know, people, lo aleinu, when you're healthy, you're healthy. When someone's in the hospital and there's serious operation, and you want to be there, and what a gemilut chesed that you don't have to worry about food. In Israel, it's a different story. I can tell you a little story. My wife broke some cartilages in her foot. She fell on Shabbos. On Sunday, I took her to the emergency room. We had been to Terem. Terem said, go to the... I think we were in Shaarei Tzedek. And here we are in the emergency room waiting for a doctor. Sheret Lumi girls are walking up and down, soup, cake, food. I know it's something like it. Chesed, that this is... And at the same time, we had good friends, the Shapiros, Erwin and Ruth, and they were in an emergency room. Erwin, something, emergency, New York, well, I don't know if it was in New York University Hospital, or Mount Sinai. And Ruthie told me they were there for 3 hours. They were starving. No food, nothing. And they're like, this is Israel. It should only get better and stronger. Gemilut Chesed, art. Now, this story with the Rebbetzin, why is it so important? And here I want to introduce you to a wonderful volume. It's a well-known author. The volume I photographed, the title page, Who Will Lead Us? Who Will Lead Us? By Samuel Heilman, H-E-I-L-M-A-N. Now, Samuel Heilman, this volume was published 2017. Samuel Heilman is a frum Jew. He's written many volumes. He's, again, you can fill me in with details. If I'm not mistaken, he teaches in the City University system of New York, and Queens College, Brooklyn College. As far as I know, he's a sociologist, but like most sociologists, the borderline between sociology and history many times is blurred. Now, the story of five Hasidic dynasties in America, and he tells the story of five Hasidic dynasties, if you recall. I think I quoted him, or could be I gave those lectures before the book was available. Lubavitch had a tremendous battle. The sixth Rebbe died, the Machlokes, the widow wanted the elder son-in-law to become Rebbe Shmaya Guraye. The Chassidim wanted the youngest son-in-law, Rebbe Menachem Mendel, to become the seventh Rebbe. The Bavov, I need not tell you, Bavov had a tremendous conflict, which I'm an eye-ear witness to. I told you the story many times. My wife and I were in Borough Park for 20 years. Every summer we were in Borough Park. We would rent there, and I, you know, whatever I did around the F train that would get me into Manhattan. And one time on Shabbos, I always davened early, so on 18th Avenue and Rabbi Feldes Shtibel, Zichrono Levracha, there was an early minyan, I think it was a 6:30 minyan. And I come home, finish davening, whatever. So we go for a walk. So one time, the true story, we walk over to Bava, 47th Street. And we come to Bava, outside, police cars, policemen, policewomen. So I went over to the policewoman. I said, we're tourists, we live in Jerusalem today. Why are you here? She said, well, you're tourists, you don't know what went on last week. They were throwing chairs at each other in the synagogue. And this week we're here early, so if anything happens, we're right on the spot. I couldn't believe my ears that I found out it was true. As you know, they split. He writes about Bavov, he writes about Biyana. Remember, Biyana, the famous Biyana Rebbe, died, and there was no Rebbe for many, many, many years. And he writes about that his grandson finally succeeded him, came in Aliyah, and Baruch Hashem, here lekavod uletiferet. Now, the Satmar is the most fascinating story here. And he tells it as it is, that this begins on page 177, that from the time the Rebbe had the stroke in 69, he basically did not function. Unconscious for 10 days, he woke up to find himself severely impaired in his speech and movement. And what happened was, I happen to know the family, they had a beautiful large home in Bal Harbor that's on the water, it's beneath Far Rockaway and near Far Rockaway. I remember visiting them, just trying to think. I think it was above Rockaway, could be close at the Far Rockaway. And the Rebbe was moved to this home, had medical care around the clock. Afterwards, he came back to Williamsburg. Ultimately, they built him a home in Kiryat Yoel. But this entire time, he didn't function. And this is where I called your attention. In the literature world, this would be impossible. The Rav Lo Aleinu took ill already by the late 70s. From 1980, 81 through 85, he had good days and bad days. His last year, and by the way, in Jewish Action, there was an article by Kenny Branda. It has the wrong date. I corrected it, but I don't know if anyone realizes. His last year was not 86, it was Hanukkah 85. After that year, they got him back to Boston, and he never left Boston again. As a matter of fact, Yitzi Lichtenstein was getting married, and the Ufruf was in Boston, so everyone could attend, and his grandfather, and that was the last time the Rebbe appeared in public. His mind, Lo Aleinu, was not with him. I don't want to tell you what happened. It breaks the heart. We have to be humble. We're humans, we're mortals, we're not God. And what happened? So they made a decision, wisely so, never to let him leave the house, have care around the clock, etc. But once he can't give a shear, he can't function. He's not the Rosh Yeshiva, he's not in YU. You follow me? A Litvish Rosh Yeshiva. Either you can pitch, or that's it, you're out of the ballpark. With the Satmar Rav between Rebbetzin Feiger and his Gabbayim, they kept up the image as if the Rebbe was still functioning. And you have this 10-year period where the Rebbetzin now is on her own. She is a dominant figure. She has all the yichus in the world, married to the Satma, to a title bound. She herself is a title bound. All the yichus. She raises millions of dollars. She is responsible for the Bikur Cholim. She is a personality unto herself. Not only that, she accepted Pidyonot, Kvitlach. Chassidim came to, by the way, the Belzer Rebbetzin is the same thing today. The Belzer Rebbetzin is a personality unto herself. Very fascinating. She holds a tish, she accepts Kvitlach. The Satmar Rebbetzin accepted Kvitlach of Pidyonot. She brought Shirayim into the main Satmar Shul. Ki'ilu, it's from the Rebbe. The Rebbe touched that plate. She brought in Shirayim. More than that, in 79, right towards the end of his life, and I showed you this picture, there was an event against Israel at the Felt Forum, that's Madison Square Garden, downstairs, the smaller hall, not that holds 25,000, but I think 7,000, 8,000. She sat next to the Rebbe in public. I mean, go and you'll run a quiz. Which Hasidus allowed a Rebbetzin to sit next to her husband in public? This was the Felt Forum. He was quite ill at the time, and she felt that she couldn't trust anyone else. Now, while all this is happening, you have Reb Moshe Teitelbaum. You see, the Satmar Rav has no children. His daughters are all gone. They're no grandchildren. They say sterility is not inherited, but many times you see in a family where there's a problem, they can't have children, whatever. It's her problem, his problem. No children. Who's going to succeed? Rabbi Yoelish is alive, but he's barely alive. He's not going to live forever. Who will succeed? And here you have his nephew. It's his brother's elder brother, who is Sigaturov. The nephew survived the Holocaust. And this nephew, over the years, established himself in Brooklyn, not a massive force. And you have to know the nephew's background. His wife and children were killed by Hitler. After the Holocaust, he, unlike the Satmarov, went back to Siget and tried to reestablish the community. By that time, the communists had taken over. He saw there was no future. He remarried a cousin who was also a Teitelbaum, who also lost her original family. All stays in the family, all in the family. And with miracles, they paid a fortune. I think the sum he has, I think it's $500, which was a tremendous sum in 46, to be smuggled across the Hungarian border to get out. He gets out, he goes to Brazil, comes to New York, Brooklyn. In Williamsburg, there already was a Sigetestibel. How was there a Sigetestibel? Because refugees arrived after World War II. And in America, what you saw was the greatest example is Washington Heights. The Yekkes who got to America coalesced around Rabbi Breuer, and they built their own community. Believe it or not, when Charlie was growing up, when he davened in Breuer's, the announcements were in German or in English?
I was a kid.
German. The newsletters from the shul. With German. Yeah. They built their own kehillah. And this is why Rabbi Breuer succeeded. Do you understand? I've often raised the question, Rabbi Jacob Hoffman was just as big as Rabbi Breuer. May have been bigger in learning. He was the Gemeinderav of Frankfurt. You follow? He didn't succeed. Came to America, was rabbi in Shari Tzedek. What's the name of the shul, the Hungarian originally? It's in the Upper West Side. Rabbi Schwartz, my Talmudist rabbi there. Shari Tzedek, right?
Ohab
Tzedek, thank you. I knew I was saying something. Ohab Tzedek, thank you. He didn't succeed. Why? Because there were Yekkes, Hungarians, but it was basically Americanized. And if you couldn't preach in English and didn't feel comfortable speaking English, you know, it's the old problem. You come in Aliyah. How do you know you've become an Israeli when you dream in Hebrew? Okay. He never dreamt in English. I'm at home in Hebrew. I dream in Hebrew. What do you want out of me? I had to speak in the army Hebrew. I dealt in the Mossad. Everything was in Hebrew. You're fine. But Breuer, so the Sigeta Hasidim got their late 30s, early 40s. They built the shtibel in Williamsburg. When Reb Moshe Teitelbaum got out, they invited him, Rebbe, we have an apartment upstairs. It's for you. You have a shul. You'll feel at home. They speak a Hungarian Yiddish. It's our minhagim. So he became the rabbi there. Later he moved to Borough Park, because at first the Ziggurat, he began first, he was there. The Satmar came, the Satmar wasn't staying, he was going back to Palestine. But when the Satmar decided to stay, his nephew was not a match for him. So he figured, let me get out of his shadow, go to Borough Park. But there's more to Reb Moshe Teitelbaum. He was a businessman. The rebbeship for him was part-time. He real estate. He gave the Heksha and Melmot. You don't appreciate, Melmot was something very big, something very new. Could you imagine takeout food? Who heard of kosher takeout food? Women worked hard, baked, cooked, but you're Americanizing. We're on living on a higher level. When we came in Aliyah, there was one kosher takeout place in all of Jerusalem. It was right where you live, on Karen Hayesod. Americans owned it, Adler, the Adler family. People, gotta be a millionaire, whoever heard that. Today, takeout food in Jerusalem, it's all over the place. Talpiot, there's one place there, you walk in, you don't know where you are. It's like a feast, endless Friday, what they have, Thursday. You go into Talpiot, to the mall, Hadam Mall, all over the place, takeout food, Burnish Island. No end, no end. Melmot was epic making. Who gave the Heksa? Who ran it? He had a good business mind. Reb Moshe Teitelbaum. Now, the Rebbetzin was a tremendous figure. It's not so simple. But she suffered from one simple fact. She was a woman. And as a woman, no matter what she did, her power was limited. Could she speak on Shabbos? Give a drasha? Power is limited. Could she have a tish where she sat at the head of the tish and gave out her shirayim? Not shirayim that she snuck into the Beis Medrash, klaimish, I don't want to say that in English, as if to say make-believe, klaimish, Yiddish, klaimish from the Satmaruv. You follow? And there was this tension here. But obviously, when the Satmaruv died, it was the Sigata, his nephew, Reb Moshe Teitelbaum, who became the successor. Now here too, it's very fascinating, and I'll tell you a beautiful story, and you'll see Olam Kamino Goholeich. And it's maybe Minishamayim, Hashkacha Pratit, because Yoma will tell you everything. It's not the human endeavor, but it's what God decrees, what God does. Could be. It's both. I say it's both. I never heard you say it's both. Eli, he's okay. You have no idea. He is so kind and so smart. We answer 10, 15 emails a day. We go out of our minds, and he corrects my English, and it's terrific, terrific. Anyway, coming back here, let me tell you a little story. You walk out of Grus, you walk to Givat Mordechai. Come into Givat Mordechai, walk up a block and a half, and where are you? A world-famous yeshiva, Chevron Yeshiva. How did Chevron Yeshiva get to Givat Mordechai? Chevron Yeshiva is on Rehov Yeshiva, one block over from Kikar Shabbat. That's where it relocated after the massacre in Chevron in 1929. But the problem was Chevron Yeshiva started growing and growing, and Rehov HaYeshiva was not big enough. There is a yeshiva there today. It's a shoot-off of Chevron. And the government gave them, Givat Mordechai was the end of the world at the time. And now they're having this big dedication, groundbreaking ceremony where they're going to build Yeshivat Chevron. Now, there is one rabbi in the United States, he's the only rabbi, practicing rabbi, who became world famous, a world individual, not a Rosh Yeshiva, but a tremendous Lamdan, and Ayit mit a brende. He could accomplish, move mountains, a short little guy. His name was Rav Eliezer Silva. So now comes the dedication of Yeshivat Hebron, and he, of course, has raised money, and they've invited him and Ryan to speak, and to his bad mazel, the El Al plane is late in arriving. Gets off the plane, speaks with people at the airport. 2 minutes later, he hires a helicopter to take him to the dedication. Now, could you imagine the sight? A guy named Rakefet describes it in his book on the Suva era. Could you imagine the sight that there on Givat Mordechai, a few blocks from here, on this empty plain, at this dedication with all the Israeli Rashi Yeshiva there, suddenly a helicopter comes down from on high and out jumps Reb Eliezer Silva. Charlie, you know why I'm telling you this? Satmarov's funeral, he died, and where do you think Reb Moshe Teitelbaum was that Shabbos? He was in Los Angeles. He gets the news, Sunday morning he died, he gets the news. It's still Shabbos in Los Angeles, and Reb Moshe Teitelbaum immediately jumps on the plane, comes back to New York. Funeral is almost over. The cemetery, it's late in the day already. Tens of thousands, hundreds of that. New York has over 100,000 people. And Reb Moshe Teitelbaum, helicopter to the funeral. Could you imagine that here he drops out of the sky, min ha-shamayim, to eulogize the Rebbe. All right. As much as Rebbe Zinfega was opposed, and she had a following, and she did have a shul that she davened at, and people close to her, and among them, I can tell you, I was one scholar in residence in Chicago. I think it was the first time I visited Chicago. And I was staying at the home of close relations of a Talmud of mine who had married into this elegant Satmar family. Not poor people. What we spoke about before, the nursing industry in Chicago. Before class, we were speaking about it. And I come into the home, and tremendous picture on the wall of the Rebbetzin. And they told me right away, where Satmar Hasidim? They were from the old country, but today the Rebbetzin is our Rebbe. Black and white, they told me. And powerful, powerful picture, person. Tremendous chuyat. I don't want to minimize Bikur Cholim, but nevertheless, it was Reb Moshe Teitelbaum, the Sigeter, who is finally selected to take over for the Satmar Rav. Now, the Sigeter, Reb Moshe, he remarried, as I said, and had quite a few children. The eldest was a daughter. Then he had three sons in a row. The eldest son was Reb Aaron. Reb Aaron married the Vishnitzer Rebbe's daughter. Until today, you will hear the criticism of Reb Aaron. He is a closet Zionist. You have to understand. His wife grew up in Tel Aviv area, Vishnitz, B'nai Brak, Tel Aviv, all over the place. She went to Beis Yaakov. Beis Yaakov, they speak Hebrew. Her native language, maybe with her father she spoke Yiddish, I don't know. But her native language is Hebrew. It's the language she went to school in, the language she counts in, the language she was taught, the language she feels most at home, most natural. The Satma never forgave the Vishnusa. They're Zionists. They're integrated. Beis Yaakov. Aaron, Reb Aaron, Satma Ruv. He's married to a lady whose native language is Hebrew. And they even accused him of speaking Hebrew at home. That publicly, at Geret Yiddish, Chassidim, Ungarish, never Hebrew. But at home, he speaks Hebrew to his wife. And I quote, Vishnitzers are unredeemably Zionist. When he married the Vishnitzer Rebbe's daughter, the Satma in Israel were warned against attending the wedding. And few actually attended. Fager expressed concerns about putting Aaron in line for the Satma crown, arguing that anyone who married into such a Zionist family was not worthy of leading Satma. And you see, Moshe Teitelbaum were right. Willy-nilly, they had to select them as Satma Rebbe, Satma Rav. There was no choice. He was the one. After landing at Kennedy Airport, he boarded a waiting helicopter that flew him straight to Kiryat Yoel and dramatically dropped down from the heavens. The symbolism was not lost on the assembled crowd. More than that, at the funeral, he was the one to say Kaddish. And you see, here you understand that if you don't have any heirs, who says Kaddish? Who says Kaddish? I can tell you, in Ohel Nechama, a woman comes in every day now and goes up to the women's section. I'm there, Mincha Mariv, and she says Kaddish. Must be she lost her father. I would imagine she looks like she's in her 60s. So it lost her father. Maybe there are no sons. She says Kaddish. Here, who will say Kaddish? He is the one who says Kaddish. Well, within the year, the Gabayim announced his selection as Satma Rav. And very humbly, he says, I will not accept any mazel tov. It's still within the year of mourning. And the entire celebration that Rav Moshe Teitelbaum has succeeded the Satma Rav, 1 year later, they have a public convocation, and he now is Satma Rav. He accepts the mazel tov. The Yid, the Satma newspaper, declares him the Gadol Hadar, the Gaon Hadar, and he now is the Rebbe. At his coronation, according to the newspapers, over 20,000 Hasidim are in attendance. Now, yes, Ali.
I mean, in terms of like Hashkafa with Siget and Satmar.
Okay, I'm going to come to that in a second. I know what you're leading to. I just want you to realize that it wasn't easy, but the Gaboyim, they have the power. They make the decisions. There's nobody else. This is the nephew. He now is taking over. And they describe the formal coronation on a Thursday night, thousands of people, and the Rebbe comes in late, makes a grand entrance. And I want to comment on that too. This too is part of the Rebbeship. This concept, the crowd comes together, and the anticipation, the Rebbe is coming in, doesn't exist in the Litvisha world. When you announce a shiur for 9 o'clock, If you're not there by 9, 9:05, 9:10, the students just walk away. They're back in the Beis Medrash. The Rebbe's late, the Rebbe's absent, you know. I don't ever recall the Rav being late. I don't recall it. And he had to fly in, and they picked him up, or brought him to the yeshiva. But you see, here, psychologically, you're waiting, the anticipation. I remember I had the one daughter got interested in Amnon Yitzchak. So she and her husband went to a weekend that's sponsored, and she was totally turned off. Thousands of people waiting, supposed to begin at 8 o'clock Friday night, and he walks in 9 o'clock. It's a concept that it goes against the Gemara. The Gemara in Bracha, Poseya al Rashi Am Kodesh. That you have to respect the people. You don't walk in on top of their heads. And they were Gedolei Israel. They would sneak in from the side so people shouldn't have to stand up for them and clear a path. But Chassidus, it's different. And Reb Moshe Teitelbaum, coronated, crowned, the Av Beit Neveda Charedut of Yerushalayim, Rav Yitzchak Weiss, announces who give up being Av Beit, let Rav Teitelbaum take over, let Satma take over. Ultimately, he's like the Satma Rav, he's called president of the Eidah Charedit Nasi, but Halacha L'maisa, it's an honorary title, it's like an honorary doctorate. Now, there is a change in Satma. Number one, the personalities are different. The Satma Rav in his prime was very confrontational, very sure of himself, very adamant in his opinions. Rav Moshe Teitelbaum was a lot quieter, a lot more, I would say, diffident would be the right word. He didn't get involved in endless machloiket. He inherited, all right, anti-Zionism, but it wasn't a headline on a daily basis. Quieter, less controversial. Satna went into a period now of growth, consolidation, and there's one more factor that we all have to recognize. The State of Israel, when it began, no one believed it would survive. I can tell you that I was very close to members here in Jerusalem, members of the Soloveitchik family who were part and parcel of the Mizrahi movement. One of them, Avram Rones, Zichrono Livracha, he was very big in Chinuch Mamlachti Dati, and he knew all the workings. And he told me, when the state was declared, the Brisker Rav and the Chazon Ish both had severe doubts if it would survive. The Brisker Rav, he quoted to me, it was his own cousin, the Brisker Rav said, the Ribbono Shel Olam Chatanus Kegeven Hashmeichel, that God gave us a smile, but they didn't think it would survive. I have to say, even in America, I remember growing up, 48, 49, 50, we were shaking. Who knew? How could the state survive so many entities, so many poverty, so many immigrants running away from Hitler, running away from the Arab countries? How can you survive? Well, I don't have to tell you, by the 1970s, by the 1980s, the State of Israel is a reality. It's here. It's real. Today, it's much more than all of that. Everyone knows we have atomic power, and we're one of the wealthiest countries in the world. It's beyond comprehension. And the high tech, and with all the Jewish mind, what's happening, what has happened, and the development, and the anti-Semitism, state is here. See, when the state becomes a reality, so the opposition has to become muted. It's like Agudat Yisrael. You'll hear people question Agudat Yisrael in America. How are you so Zionistic? How are you helping? How are you doing? I know some of the young Turks in Agudat Yisrael today, they're not much different than our own thinking. And they'll answer you. Kolzman, there wasn't a state. We fought it. We knew it wouldn't be religious. It would be Ben-Gurion. But now the state's a reality. More Jews live there than any other place in the world. We have to help. We have to do what we can. This is the reality. This reality affected Satmar as well. And the opposition was more muted. Yes, there always was an element and there always will be an elephant. J Street. You're up to the news, what's going on at this very moment. Well, just as there's a J Street, you'll have within Satmar a certain element that will be totally opposed and demonstrate. And at the UN, Malk and I were there once a few years ago. I can't even remember. Maybe it was the last time we were in America during the winter. And there was a demonstration at the UN, and we looked at them, and I couldn't believe it. We see these people demonstrating dressed in black, dressed like Hasidim, and I look at their faces. Some of these faces were not Jewish. They were Mexicans. I don't know what they were. Rav Shechter, Heshi told me that Satmar pays them to demonstrate and stand there maledicting Israel. So you're going to just have morons pouring money, maledict too. But during Reb Moshe's time as Rebbe, everything was muted. Personality was different. He was not his uncle. He was not the confrontational person with that personality that the uncle had. There may be many reasons why. Maybe he was more Americanized. Maybe he understood the American scene better. Maybe he had the Yetzer Hara within him of Zionism, Mizrahi. I once almost gave Rav Goldrich a heart attack. We became very close. Rav Chaim Goldrich, the Kerem Biafna. How did we become close? Because I taught it in the early years. Michalach had a lot of ladies, children of very famous parents, and I somehow was very close to them. They helped me immensely. I remember when I taught, if I struggled for a word in Hebrew, and this goes back 50 plus years, they would. I'll give you an example of a word they taught me. I came in Aliyah. Whoever knew the word for crutches in America? Did you ever use the word crutches in Hebrew? Kabayim. They taught it to me. Multifaceted. Rav Goni. They taught it to me. I have what they wrote. Every Thursday I would sit with them after class. Rav Kahana's daughter, Rav Goldrich's daughter. There was another few women. And they would write the words for me, Hebrew, English. They all knew if they had been Lustig. Lustig, the girls knew. It's a famous, I don't know if it exists today, but it was a high school in Petah Tikva, I think it was, that was more open than Beit Yaakov. And they knew English perfectly. So I became very close to Rav Goldrich through his daughter, Leah. And one Shabbos, had it be in the 1980s, we're in Lawrence, guest of the Liebermans, and one part of their house we're located, the other part of the Goldbergs are there for Shabbos. So that Friday night, the women excused themselves, went to sleep at 11 o'clock, but me and Fabrengt until 1, 2 in the morning. And Rabbi Goldrich told me about the whole problem. He was raised anti-Zionist, anti-this, and here, they want him to become Rosh Yeshiva in Kerem Biavna, Mizrahi institution. And he didn't know what to do. And he asked the Brisker Rabbi, you all know the story. And he asked the Chazon Ish. So the Chazon Ish told them to take it. So I told Rav Goldrich, you see, the Chazon Ish saw in your heart there was a little tzeglem. I gave him a real dig, you know, it's an expression from Yiddish that you're a little bit of an apikoris. A little tzeglem means a cross, but it doesn't mean, what was the cross? At Gizen, the Nekuda from the Mizrahi, Ba'achin Hat, say under that. And he said, no, you know, like he still didn't become, all right, halavai. But that's exactly, you see, time marches on. Israel is a reality. And with Reb Moshe Teitelbaum, the Sigita Satmar Ruv, it was a lot quieter. On the other hand, Satmar was growing, enhancing. The Rebbetzin Feger, who was alive, she was limited, but the Bika Cholim, that was her baby. And Satmar now, they're mastering America. You have to read the doctorates that were written. They're learning how to play the game. They're learning how to get money from the government. They're learning how to declare, as wealthy as they were, so many Satmar impoverished. Food stamps, help for children who are crippled, who are born challenged. Among Hasidim, there may very well be a higher percentage of such children because they're constantly intermarrying. Teitel marries Teitelbaum. Halberstam marries Halberstam. You follow? Friedman marries Friedman. And they're Americanizing. A doctorate, I may quote from it later, but two doctorates were just written on Satmar. One centers on Williamsburg and one centers on Kiryat Yoel. But they both make the point there's a period now, you're talking Reb Moshe, he's Satmarov 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, although the last years he really wasn't functioning either, as his uncle wasn't functioning, but others took over. They're Americanizing. And Satmar has its place on the map. It becomes a political power. Who dreamt when the Satmar Ruv arrived in Williamsburg, Crown Heights, a refugee from Palestine, a survivor, not knowing anyone? Who had ever dreamed that one day they become a prime political power, controlling tens and tens and tens of thousands of votes? It's not like us. We don't vote en masse. Yomo will tell you that I told him, I declared, I know who you're going to vote for. I'm good at Yisrael. And I wasn't upset. I should have said, how dare you vote? No, Baruch Hashem. I only said, don't vote for Likud. I have my own sheet. I said, vote for Aguda, vote for Shas, vote for my party, Smotrich, Ben-Gvir. Why not Likud? Because I said Likud will not harm religion, but they won't fight for religion. And the fact that Netanyahu could say the other day, we're not going to be a Talmudic state, idiot, who paskins Likud and Talmudic, talk right, halacha, shulchan aruch, say we're going to be a Jewish state and democratic, that's all. Don't make the mistake of saying a halachic state so German newspapers should write we'll execute homosexuals and Mechalalei Shabbos every Friday afternoon like they do in Mecca. Seichel, common sense, Jewish state. All right, and a democratic state. Jewish state first, democratic state afterwards. And times, this is what's happening. This is Reb Moshe. Now, let me go one step further. While all this is happening, the Lashon Haranics are busy. Who's going to succeed? Where next? The secession. All right. In a Litvisha world in YU, and I've said this so many times, the very fact that I can sit here and teach is a credit to YU. No one, believe me, I didn't know until 10 years ago that I have the biggest YU Yichus in the world. I may be the only blood relationship of Rabbi Dr. Bernard Revel, who's alive kicking Shema Torah Mitzvah. There's part of the other families with Gluck. Are you aware? The president of Hebrew Union College was Rabbi Revel's uncle, actually, or cousin. That they were blood relatives, let's say. I think it's his father's half-brother's son. So they were cousins. I write about it, read about it. The Revel pleaded with him when he divorced his wife to give a get and not just depend upon a civil divorce. He finally listened to Revel with miracles. But I have figured, I didn't know, I wasn't appointed by Dr. Could you imagine Rav Shmuel Belton saying to me in 1962, and we drank a l'chaim. Imagine if I could have said to him, Dr. Belkin, I'm Rabbi Revel's cousin. This is historic. His own cousin appointed to the faculty. But you see, the greatness of YU, you don't have to be part of the family. Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, when people say he's the Rav Sunlight, smack their face because they're trying to say, of course he's the Rabbi Aaron is a Gadol Shebegadolim. The fact that he married the Rav's daughter is secondary. But on his own merits, not the same Eliwood. Rabbi Aaron gone to a different world today, you understand? Rabbi Aaron was Rabbi Aaron. Some very special. I have no idea who that human being was. So, but in the Hasidic world, it doesn't work that way. If you don't have the blood in your veins, forget about it. You can't be Rabbi. Now, here's where the Balabatim get involved. And more so in Satmar than Lubavitch, as I said an hour ago, because in Satmar, the Balabatim had power. The Satmar Rebbe was very smart. It's like the Belzer Rebbe. The Belzer Rebbe has done wonders. So you'll say, who's the Belzer Rebbe? He's a Gaon? I don't know. A Ken Shas and Paiskim? I'm not certain. I think in YU there are Rebbeim who may be able to learn better than the Belzer Rebbe. A Weiss Meifsen, he shows wonders? I don't know. Could be in this very building you have Rebbeim who have done miracles in their life beyond the Belzer Rebbe. I mean, let's be serious. But the Belzer Rebbe, Seichel? Yes. And he has Balabatim. Tremendous. I know some of them. I knew some of them. They're not alive anymore. These people, the Belzer wants advice. He knows who to turn to. He wants people to. I know one Balabas who was a tremendous builder, and the Rebbe asked him, come in and help me. The rest of his life he devoted to the Rebbe. But the same ability he had in building, constructing, and making money and turning out Class A work, he devoted to the Rebbe. So the Balabatim in Satmar would mix him. And then question starts developing. Who will succeed the Rebbe Moshe Teitelbaum? He's not going to live forever. He did live into his 90s. But, you know, the last 10 years of his life already, we have to face it. We're a certain age. We slow down. I could never teach the way I taught 20, 30 years ago, so many classes. All right. Baruch Hashem. You heard what I said yesterday. I stand on it that people wanted to celebrate. I had a milestone birthday a few days ago. And I wouldn't let any celebration. I went out with my wife and daughters. Why? I have reasons why. I've seen too many of my friends celebrate big birthdays, and what happens afterwards is not for me. I said my celebration is the two shirim I will give this week, yesterday and today. Baruch Hashem, ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu. But who will succeed? He had six children with a second wife. The eldest was a girl. Then he had three boys in a row, and there are more boys, but three boys in a row. And see, here's where the Balabatim got involved. Logically speaking, it should be Rabbi Aaron. And it would seem that the Sigut HaRav was in favor of Rabbi Aaron. But Adler Balabatim felt we won't be able to control him. mind of his own. They have someone else in mind. The third son, Rabbi Zalman. And they constantly threw against Rabbi Aaron that he's a closet Zionist. Married to a Beis Yaakov girl? Oh my gosh. Married to a Beis Yaakov girl? It's like Rivka Yosef in the book on her father that I showed you an hour and a half ago. Beis Yosef, she starts, her father is setting her up with yeshiva guys, you know, classic yeshivas, traditional yeshiva, and they said, what? They go out with her and all they do is curse and maledict Michwala. How can you go to Michwala? How can... And she comes home, she tells her father, that's it. But Rav Ovadia was smart enough. He says, all right, my daughter has to go out with the Hester boy. And he finds the Hester boy. And she goes out with him. I love what it says in the book. She goes out with him and he falls for her. She doesn't fall for him right away, but she figures she'll use him to help do her reports, her vodot, you know, her papers. I think it's the English word. Her term papers for Michwala, he'll help her. So she tolerates him till she falls in love. It's a beautiful, beautiful little story there. But you see the Balabatim, this guy Aaron, he's a Zionist, he's a Tzioni, she's a Beis Yaakov girl. Eretmeter Ivrit, ui vei. Such a tragedy, look what's happened. And they start looking to the third son, Reb Zalman. All right, we'll talk about that next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. It's a very fine volume, who will succeed us, who will succeed. And then this is the Hasidic world, and this is the Machlokes. The truth of the matter is, if we wouldn't be Orthodox Jews, Torah Jews, Melech v'lo Malka, the Rebbetzin Feger would have succeeded her husband. She was loved. She did wonderful things. And all right, she was anti-Zionist, but she gave out. She would come to Israel in $3 million in cash, give it out in Meir Shearim, in Geula, in Bnei Brak. Listen, these are wonderful things. Whether it's good to give poor people cash, I always say you can't win. It's like Yontif Sheni. Yontif Sheni, if you're machmir, if you observe a second Yontif in Israel, you're a mekil, you're making brachot lebatala. If you're mekil, you're machmir. You can't win. There's no way to solve the problem and be happy that you're yotzei legamrei. That's it. Same thing, you know someone who's a shlemazel, and he doesn't make a living. So what do? You slip him $100. Slip him today $1,000. Are you doing a good thing or a bad thing? You're doing a good thing, you're helping a poor person. You're doing a bad thing, he'll never want to get off his feet, etc. Particularly people who are young. This is the whole problem with the yeshiva world. If our good at Yisrael will get every kid, will get $1 million here, what they're carrying on in Haaretz, $1 million for this yeshiva, that yeshiva, who's going to learn the core curriculum? Who's going to go to work? You follow? It's a catch-22. It's not simple to come up with the right balance. All right. And my grandson tells me that in Yerushalayim, he was just laid off. He's in high tech and they're laying off people. If anyone knows a high tech offering for a very capable young man, he's doctor in the art part of it, let me know. It's one of my elder grandsons. So he told me that in Tel Aviv, he works in Tel Aviv, lives in Yerushalayim. I said, says Tel Aviv, you get paid 20% more than Yerushalayim for the same work. I said, why? He says, because in Yerushalayim, a lot of chared work in high tech. And the people know you don't have to pay charedim as much as the other people. I don't like that answer, but he tells me it's a reality. So you see, you don't know. But the Rebbetzin, if she would have been a male, she would have been unanimous. But She's a lady. She's limited. The public sphere. Okay. Reb Moshe, the Sigur to Rav, took off Yom Yom. Not the same. Not the same loudness, but the Balabatim, what Satma became under Reb Moshe Teitelbaum, a force, Americanized. 20, 30, 40 years go by, they're living in America. Oh boy, they are living the American dream, and they know how to utilize America to their benefit. And two doctorates have just come out now saying exactly, I'm paraphrasing, the thrust of both doctorates. My dear students, we've accomplished today. We brought you to the final machleket. We'll finish it out next week quite quickly and summarize and look. And then I'm coming into the refutation of not just Satma, but anyone who's not a religious Zionist with all his heart and soul, I declare him a sinner. And I challenge him to refute my words. But Be'ezrat Hashem, we'll get there. Eli, self-confidence? All right. Could be too much self-confidence, but for the sake of Eretz Yisrael, I have a right. Eretz Yisrael, I'm Yisrael, I'll be Torah Yisrael, I like your beard, it's taken off, as they say. My dear students, first of all, are there any questions from the erudite people in front of me? I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, honoring me with your presence. Not everyone wants to make the trip. It's the traffic here is unbelievable today, and I'm one of the few who can laugh, because 6 o'clock in the morning when I drive here, I can't go with Bazak already. They're entering Tel Aviv. You have no idea. They start rushing. The minute they see the sign to the highway, they're doing 90 kilometers an hour. Charlie, I'm not making it up. This is.
I drive every day.
You know, but this is here. They're going out. So I go around the long way. Baruch Hashem, no traffic. Just be careful. People going to shul with talis tefillin on me. And Givat Mordechai from Jews. And I get in. Then when I leave now, the traffic is quieter. So I can even go with Bazak. But if I leave earlier, the other days that I'm here every day, you don't realize I take my work home from my, I have a lot of work out there. I'm writing on the shurim and creating and doing. It's no one writes the shurim for me. So I need model HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I want to thank you very much for braving the storm and honoring me with your presence until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vedanya. Yomo, can you open it up to the world? Simon, was Yomo here in your time when you were in class? Okay, so you know Yomo. He's now officially an academic assistant at Gris. He gets paid a salary to help yours truly and the other Rebbeim as well. Unfortunately, I'm the one who needs his help the most. Vic, how are you?
Recording stopped.
Recording. Is it open?
Yes.
Slowly.
Are you feeling any better, Vic?
What?
Are you feeling better?
A little bit, thank God, Berkshire.
And your sister? Hey, you're still coughing. Your sister?
She's still in the hospital.
Still in the hospital. We should only have good news. Are there any questions from around the world? No. Okay, that's a good sign that we've hit home. All right, I want to wish Mark Wiener a very safe, pleasant, easy trip. Is it a direct flight from Chicago?
Yes.
El Al?
United.
Direct flight. Unbelievable. Okay. Then you don't even have a Yisrael Niknek be Yisurim, but when it's a direct flight, no Yisurim be Yisrat Hashem. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. Thank you. Thank you for honoring me with your presence. And be Yisrat Hashem, next Sunday and Monday, we pick up where we left off. Sunday, the ladies who have noses that are too big and want to cut them down, can they do the operation? And Monday, the whole machloket World War III, wow, look at that young man smiling at me, so handsome. World War III, wow, like a Hollywood movie, they get the baby to smile, look at that, wow, wow. World War III between the followers of Reb Aaron and the followers of Reb Zalman, until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vidalia. Ah, there's Nachum Lam, Kanayin Hara. Regards to your parents. Regards to your parents. But by the way, when I refute the Satmar Rav, no one would understand me better than your father, because it's the Rav. I'm quoting the Rav, Mori Rebbe, and your father will understand well, because we grew up together under the hashpah of the Rav. And by the way, when I start the East European yeshiva and I talk about Rechenich Fishman, you better get your parents here, because no one will understand the outside of your father. You understand? Tell them it's time to leave Kew Gardens Hills and join us al Admat HaKodesh. Okay.
They'll have to come in person.
In person, I'm talking in person. At our age, I go to sleep 9:30 already. I can't believe it. For 6 o'clock on, I start feeling tired. I drove my doctor crazy. He cut down some of my high blood pressure medicine, and it helped. I'm not as tired as I felt a few months ago, but it's unbelievable. Old age, boy, they don't let you forget that you're mortal with a capital M. Baruch Hashem, till we meet again in health and happiness, das v'danya.